Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
Friend of the show Larry Schmidt from the Gridiron Uniform Database contacted me recently about some confusions going on around the internet about the lineage of the Baltimore Colts, the New York Yankees, and the Dayton Triangles, and he's going to clear it up for us in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And for this episode, we've got a real special treat. We're going to go back and talk about some confusion over some modern teams with some antiquated teams. And our friend Larry Schmidt of the Big Blue Interactive and Gridiron Uniform Database is here to help us out. Larry Schmidt, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Thanks for having me, Darren. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, Larry, you brought up a very interesting topic that you wanted to discuss, something that I believe you described as being in your craw. And I think you really straightened me out on this a little bit, and I'm anxious to learn more about it. So it has to do with the Dayton Triangles, the Brooklyn Dodgers, and the Baltimore Colts, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, and about three or four teams called the New York Yankees, the New York Yanks. There was another Brooklyn team involved. It's confusing. You know, the first couple of decades of the NFL, there was a lot of franchise movement, teams changing names, teams suspending operations for a year and then coming back. You had rival leagues. There were three AFLs. There was the All-America Conference. So it can get confusing very, very quickly and very easily. But the, you know, the way I brought it up to you is, you know, I see a very common misconception written. I've seen it in history books. You see it all the time on sports blogs. When people refer to the current day Indianapolis Colts, a lot of people will say they're descendants of the Dayton Triangles, which is not true. The Dayton Triangles, they were a charter member of the APFA, which became the NFL in 1922, and they played in Dayton through 1929. And then that franchise moved to Brooklyn in 1930 and played there as the Dodgers through 1943. And then their last year in Brooklyn, they changed their name from the Dodgers to the Tigers, but they were the same team, the same owner. And then this is where things begin to get confusing, because it was during World War II and the manpower shortage. And, you know, everybody knows there were team mergers. You know, everybody knows the Pittsfield Steagles, because they had the really cool name, and they know the Carpets, the Steelers and the Cardinals merged for a year.
Because that was not a cool name.
It was not a good, they were a bad team. They were with two. But in 1945, the Brooklyn Tigers did merge with the Boston Yanks. The Boston Yanks began playing in 1944, but they didn't come up with a cool, a mashup name like the Tiger Yanks or something like that. They still pretty much played. They were known as the Boston Yanks when they played in Boston. They played one game in New York at Yankee Stadium. They played the Giants, of course. And I have the program of that game, and it just says the Yanks. It doesn't say Boston Yanks, Brooklyn Yanks.
They could have been the Tanks, the Tigers and the Yanks, and World War II.
Yeah,
era, the
I know.
Tanks,
and you're right. World War II, and, you know, buy war bonds. And yeah.
Right.
God, you should have been a marketing guy for this team, and we wouldn't be in this mess that we are today.
That wouldn't have been good for anybody, believe me.
That's awesome. But here's where it gets really, really messy. So the Yanks and the Dodgers played the 1945 season as this merged team. And near the end of the season, World War II was coming to a close and, you know, all these soldiers were going to be coming back from overseas. There were already plans in place for this rival league to start up, the All-America Conference. And Dan Topping, who is the owner of the Tigers, half of the franchise, received an overture. You know, hey, come join our league. You know, we want a team in New York. And he accepted the offer. So his team, the Brooklyn Tigers, actually defected from the NFL. They joined the All-America Conference, but they didn't play at Ebbets Field. They played at Yankee Stadium, and they called themselves the New York Yankees, which every rival league, you know, there were three AFLs prior to the All-America Conference. Every team had a league in Yankee Stadium and they called them the Yankees. So this is the fourth New York Yankees franchise already, and it's only 1946. And to make it even more confusing, the All-American Conference also had a team called the Brooklyn Dodgers, but they had no lineage to anybody. They were their own entity. They only lasted 3 years. And then in 1949, all the Brooklyn players, the Brooklyn franchise dissolved and all those players went to the Yankees anyway. At the end of the All-America Conference's run, 1949, the Yankees franchise folded, they dissolved, and all their assets were divided amongst the New York Football Giants and the New York Yanks. You remember back in 1944, there was a team called the Boston Yanks that merged with the Brooklyn Tigers. Boston moved to New York in 1949. They played one season in the Polo Grounds with the Giants as the New York Bulldogs, because the Yankees of the All-American Conference were playing Yankee Stadium. The All-America Conference ended, the Yankees team folded. So the New York Bulldogs crossed the Harlem River into Yankee Stadium, took back their old name. They were the New York Yanks. So the New York Yanks, 1950, they had a draft with the New York Giants. The Yanks won the coin flip. They had first choice. So they took Buddy Young from the Yanks. The Giants took Arnie Weinmeister from the Yankees, and they alternated picks back and forth. So the New York Yanks played for 2 years, 1950, 1951, then 1952, you know, they were having trouble competing with the Giants. They were a strong team. They moved to Dallas, played one season as the Dallas Texans. They didn't even make it through half of the season. They went bankrupt. The ownership group abandoned the team. So the NFL assumed operations. They took control of the Yanks franchise for the remainder of the 1952 season. They finished out their schedule on the road. They never played another game in Texas again. And at the end of the 1952 season, that franchise charter was terminated. They closed the books on it. And that was the end of the lineage that began all the way back in 1920 with the Dayton Triangles. That's the end of the road.
Okay.
Now, 1953, the NFL wanted another go at Baltimore because the All-America Conference also had a team in Baltimore. The original Baltimore Colts, they were there. Well, they started in 1946 as the Miami Seahawks. That franchise moved to Baltimore in 47. They played in Baltimore for three seasons in the All-America Conference, 1950. They were admitted to the NFL. George Preston Marshall of the Redskins wanted a team in Baltimore. He saw them as a natural rival for the Washington, and the Washington, Baltimore, two cities close to one another. They were a bad team. They were poorly run. They went bankrupt at the end of the season. That franchise charter was terminated after 1950. So 1953, a new franchise charter was drawn up for the second Baltimore Colts franchise. They were an expansion team, not connected to anybody or anything prior. And then this is the Colts team, you know, a couple of years later, everybody knows, with Johnny Unitas and Lenny Moore and all those great players, and they won some NFL titles, and they're still, you know, in Indianapolis playing today. So that is a unique franchise unto itself, born in 1953.
So the 1953 is when, that's when Mr. Rosenblum became involved with the Colts, correct? And he then traded in the early 70s with Irsay.
That's right.
Trade the Rams, well, Rams yeah, for
so
the
that's
Colts.
Another confusing story unto itself. Yeah, we're gonna right. We're gonna stick to this one for now. That's another okay. That's another story for another day.
Okay, so we actually have you know, there's two different Colts teams. You know, one ended right. in 1950. You said the next one started, just shared the same name and same city in 53. So there's a 3-year gap there that sort of had the termination between her. And the Texans were not the Colts of the
Texans. The Texans go back to the Boston Yanks of 1944. They were the Boston Yanks. They had that one merged year with the Tigers, but they kept continued as the Yanks through 48. 1949, the Yanks moved to New York, played as the Bulldogs that one season in the Polo Grounds. And then when Yankee Stadium became available, they moved over there and then reclaimed their Yanks name.
So this is almost like a telegram. You're having the, you know, the beep, 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 you know, Dayton Triangles, New York Yanks, Boston Yanks, stop.
And yeah, that's right.
Okay.
That's right. And it doesn't help that you have the Yanks and you had three other teams in New York playing as the Yankees. And that's just, you know, that goes all the way back to 1926, the first AFL with Red Grange. They were the New York Yankees and they were a rival of the NFL, and they started salary wars in the 1926, and the football giants almost went bankrupt trying to keep up with them. But, you know, that league only lasted a season. But that team, Grange's Yankees, were admitted to the NFL in 1927 because the NFL wanted Red Grange because he, for his marquee value, he was, you know, the most famous football player at the time, you know, other than maybe Jim Thorpe. But, you know, Red Grange was, you know, younger and, you know, he could still play. He was in his prime. And so that team played in the NFL for two seasons before they went bankrupt. And then the Giants actually were awarded their franchise charter to compensate for some of their losses. And that franchise charter was used to bring the Staten Island Stapletons into the NFL.
Oh, okay. I did not know that. Yeah, so there's quite a few teams in the New York City greater area.
There were a bunch in the 20s and the 30s. And, you know, for a couple of seasons, there were three teams because you had the Giants, you had the Stapletons. And then in 1930, Dayton moved to Brooklyn. They got Ebbets Field and they played as the Dodgers. And they had a pretty decent run. They played in Brooklyn for 15 years.
Yeah. So the main thing we're taking out of this is the Indianapolis Colts. The only lineage that current Indianapolis Colts franchise has is the Baltimore Colts, and that which started in 1953. That's
right.
That's the history of that.
Baltimore Colts 2.0.
Okay. Now, do the current Colts, do they have any of the, does their records only go back to the 1953 as far as like rushing yes. titles and championships? I mean, they didn't have any championships prior to the Baltimore Colts of the 53s, the Rosenblum era.
That first Colts team hardly won anything. They were not a good team.
Okay. So I guess it's the thing that we can probably most in our time link this to is maybe the old Cleveland Browns before they turned into the Ravens. The Ravens don't take those titles, even though they took the
right.
players.
Yeah, no, that did not happen.
The records stay with the current new Browns.
Yeah, that was a special thing that they did for the people of Cleveland.
Yeah, okay.
The one thing that Art Modell left behind was the uniforms and the records.
Right. Okay, very interesting. Well, that is some great research. I'm glad you got that off your chest. You feel better now about this?
A little bit.
No, that's extremely interesting. That's very well done. Very well said. And I mean, you were sending me some charts the last few days that you made up, even really made make some great sense. And maybe I can twist your arm a little bit and we can post, sure. Post those up on the website too. So everybody can enjoy
absolutely,
those.
Absolutely. Get it out there. It's one thing to listen to me talk about it, but to have a visual aid in front of you with a timeline and the data right in front of you, it kind of makes it a little bit clearer, I think.
Yeah.
And, I think I shared that monstrosity of a graph with you a while back. I was doing some research on the 1920s, and I was doing some deep dives on some of the pre-title game titles in the 1920s, where there weren't even divisions. Everyone would just stack top to bottom. It was an unbalanced schedule. Teams played different amounts of games. Some teams played like 12 games at home, one game on the road, and it was four or five disputed titles, and a few of them, they involved the Buffalo All-Americans and the Decatur Stallies and the Chicago Stallies. And as I'm just doing more, the more you get into the weeds, the more confusing it gets. So I came up with this chart as an aid for me just to kind of keep my information straight. And I'm tracing team movements. A team would suspend operations for 1 year, come back a year later, but they'd have a different name. And, and some of that came from, the Canton Bulldogs suspended operations for a year. So the Cleveland Indians signed a bunch of the Canton Bulldogs players, changed their name to the Cleveland Bulldogs just to capitalize on some of the Bulldogs panache. Cleveland Bulldogs actually won the title that year. A year later, the people in Canton, were financially stable enough to revive their team again. So the Canton Bulldogs were back, but the Cleveland team kept the name Bulldogs. So you had the Cleveland Bulldogs and the Canton Bulldogs playing each other in the same year. And some people could mistakenly think, if you're just flipping through an almanac or a record book, you see, Canton Bulldogs, 1924, 1925. Oh, Canton moved to Cleveland. There was no team in Canton and the Bulldogs moved to Cleveland, but they didn't. That was the Cleveland Indians franchise. They just changed the name and they had, some of the Canton players on their team. A lot of that went on in the 1920s. A lot of that went on. And that was how I, put all this together with the Dayton and the Brooklyn and the Boston Yanks and the New York Bulldogs. And, the AFL had three AFLs had three teams called the New York Yankees. There was one in 1926. Then in 1936, the second AFL had a New York Yankees team. And then in 1940, the third AFL had a New York Yankees team. That league only lasted 2 years, because then in 1941, of course, World War II broke out and a lot of the players ended up going overseas. So that was the end of that league. But then on the other side of World War II, you have the All-America Conference, and they have a team, the New York Yankees, who used to be the Brooklyn Dodgers, who used to be the Dayton Triangles. So it's I understand people get confused. It's easy to get lost in all that.
It most definitely is. Now, we did a story on the Boston Yanks probably about a month ago. And it was kind of interesting how they got their name, because I always sat there and thought about it. So, boy, that's a weird name in Boston, because I know today, people in Boston don't like the word Yankees
right.
coming in their town.
Yanks is more palatable.
Right. Well, I guess what happened is the owner, and his name escapes me right now, he wanted to have his team. He was based in New York City. He wanted to put his team in Yankee Stadium.
Yes.
And there was some controversy or conflict of interest or something. He couldn't get in there. And so I think the Giants ended up battling him on it. He couldn't get in there because of the Giants is what it was.
Yes. Because he was sort of a media mogul of the day. He owned a number of radio stations. So this is before television, and radio was the way that the NFL was beginning to reach a wider fan base. Like the Washington Redskins had a bunch of radio stations, not only, in Washington, but they had them in the Carolinas and in Virginia. And they had a broader, they opened up into the South because they really had very little competition. And it was the same thing with the Chicago Bears. They had a bunch of radio contracts and they were just broadcasting Bears games all over the Midwest. So they became popular doing that. So, you know, the NFL's like, okay, well, you know, radio, this is the wave of the future. And this guy owns a bunch of radio stations. We got to get him in our league. He couldn't get Yankee Stadium, but there was a space for him in Boston. And he just, all right, I'm going to call my team the Yanks then.
And you know where he got that money from? His name was Ted Collins, by the way.
Yes.
I just looked it up. And Ted Collins, he was, like you said, he was in show business. He was in radio and some things like that. But he was the one that discovered Kate Smith, the great actress and starlet of the day. And she was so indebted to him that she split 50-50 with him for her. They were like best of friends all the rest of their lives. Uh-huh. And they split the cost on her. And she actually named them the Yankees. And when they had to go to Boston, he said, okay, I got to pull the E's off the end and put, you know, his name, just to make it more, a little bit more palatable in Boston.
That's right. So, we want these people in Boston to buy tickets and come to the games.
So Kate Smith actually named them. That's kind of interesting too. I thought. So very fascinating. It's a lot, really a lot of different twists and turns there with, like you said, with the Yankees and Dodgers names, you know, we're so used to hearing them in the baseball world, but baseball was a very well established sport long before professional football. So they were coming in on the shirt tails of those names, just trying to get the same fandom, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, they were. I mean, the football Giants got their name from the baseball Giants because they both played at the Polo Grounds. You know, the Bears played at Wrigley Field with the Cubs. So football players are bigger than baseball players. So the Cubs grew up to be Bears. A lot of teams did that.
Yeah. Very, very fascinating history that these names are. And I'm glad that you could come on here and clear up that air a little bit here. And we'll put your charts up on Pigskin Dispatch. We'll put in the show notes, there's links to our site to get you there. And it really makes things a lot clearer because it's a very nice colored lines and each team has its own color and abruptly stops on the years, like you said.
And we have to give some credit to our friend Bill Schaefer, you know, with all his color artwork. He helps bring the 1920s and 30s and 40s to life. So I made sure that the bars on the chart, you know, match the colors of the jerseys that Bill put on the Gridiron Uniform database.
Very impressive. Very impressive.
It's all teamwork. I couldn't do this by myself.
Well, speaking of the Gridiron Uniform database and Big Blue Interactive, do you have anything coming up that we can look forward to seeing some of your work or maybe something you've recently put out that we like to see?
Not put out yet, but I've been working for a while on an article for Big Blue Interactive on the 1990 Giants. I have the outline and I'm still doing some deep dive research in the newspaper archives. But that'll be coming out hopefully by or around the time of the NFL draft. And, you know, when you had the interview with all of us, Bill and Tim, he hinted at a big reveal coming. I can't say too much other than it should be coming out fairly soon. So I'm sure Bill will be getting in touch with you and letting you know, but it's going to be a whole new section of the Gridiron Uniform database with some cool stuff in there. It'll definitely be worth checking out. Wow. But I can't tell you, I can't say any more than that. Otherwise, you know, I'll be blacklisted.
Yeah, you don't want to have
Bill,
that.
Bill and Tim will shut me down for a while.
We don't want that. We don't want anybody angry. We'll wait. We'll wait with great anticipation as we have here for the last month or so. So
the off season is a great time for projects like that because from the preseason in August through the Super Bowl, it's who's wearing what this week and new uniforms and teams are busting out new uniform combinations every week and you have patches. So it's keeping up with the current. And then, from February through, early training camp, July, we get to do really fun stuff like going way back into the archives and finding a lot of historical stuff, which, I find a lot of fun. That's my favorite thing to do.
Yeah, well, you do a great job of it, you and Tim and Bill and everybody else at the Gridiron Uniform Database. Very good job, and it's just such an interesting site. So make sure everybody checks that out. We quite often have them as guests on here. You've also heard them over on the Sports Jersey Dispatch podcast. We've played some clips from that interview that Tim and Larry and Bill and I all had a conversation probably about a little over a month ago now, early February, I think we did that. Yeah, very interesting indeed. And like I said, we can't wait to see what these big secret is that they have over there at the GUD. So we're anxiously awaiting that.
Thanks. I'm looking forward to seeing it too.
Yeah.
You know, Bill only shares so much with me. I'm on a need to know basis.
Well, hey, I have a lot of people like that with me too. So that don't tell me enough.
I haven't seen the big reveal myself yet either.
Sometimes it's my wife that doesn't tell me everything. Hey, here's how I'm spending the money. But we all recognize that. Well, Larry, thank you very much for spending the time and reaching out and sharing this great story with us and, you know, clearing some things up here in the world of football history. We would definitely like to preserve correct history, and we appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure. I always look forward to it.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.